Thank you for being here with me and welcome back. My name is Catherine Daniels and I love to empower people with spiritual healing and wellness. The best thing about Retreats of Peace is the gift of inner peace, greater love, and joy. And during these times of changes and uncertainty in the world, nothing is permanent except our souls. And that's why we need to come together as we travel through one another's countries, creating a bridge, removing all the labels, and as we come together as one people, finding our home in one world. This is why our signature talk today is so important. Today, I am super excited to welcome my guest speaker, Maurice Martin. How are you today?
I am doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
I am so happy you're here with us. For my show audience, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure, absolutely. I guess the best way to describe myself, I am an author, I'm a speaker, I'm a counselor, I'm a spiritual coach, and I heard a preacher say this once. It was T.D. Jakes, and he said, never let men place a period where God placed a comma, right? And so I feel like that goes for me because I described a bunch of things that I am, but I'm a lot more than that. And so I'm a survivor, I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a teacher, I'm a preacher, I'm a lot of things. And so, you know, I'm just happy to be here because I think that what you're doing on your podcast is so necessary, that people need hope. People need a pathway to peace. And I think that's so much of my life purpose, is helping take people to those places in life and helping people to know that it's possible. So I would start off by saying, I think that's the best way I can describe me.
It is amazing that you're doing this kind of work as well, because I agree with you. We're living in a time where there's a lot of uncertainty and people don't feel that they have any sense of control on what's happening around them and what's going on in the world. And often I feel like it's regressed people back to when they were children, because when we're children, we are at the mercy of our elders and the adults that we live with, and we don't have any control. And a lot of times that's a crazy time for children, especially that don't have a safety net with their parents or in their environment. And that's something that I most definitely can relate to. Is that something you can relate to?
Absolutely. I think that when you have moments in your life where shifts change and transitions change and the control you once had is no longer available, it forces you to recalibrate to your situation and to ask, what do I stand for and what do I believe in, right? That if I'm in a childlike position, in a childlike posture, then what I report to matters. The boundaries and constructs that are placed around me and within me matter a whole lot. I don't think it's a bad thing to be childlike, right? Because I believe in childlike faith and childlike wonder, right? That when I'm my most childlike is the time I can most believe that something great is possible. I have two children, and when I spend time with my two-year-old, there is something about her, actually now she's three, there's something about the way that she believes, right? She hasn't had the same disappointments that I've had. She hasn't had the same brokenness that I've felt. And so there's a part of her that believes daddy can always take care of this. Mommy will always find a way. Hey, at the end of the day, we're going to be good. And I think sometimes when we get to those places of having control, we actually create ceilings and barriers on our potential. So we want things to be so safe and so familiar and so ordinary and so formulaic that we will actually limit how happy we can become. We limit how healthy we can become. We limit the possibilities of how much we can grow, because growing would take childlike wonder and childlike risks and childlike opportunities and not seeing everything as an obstacle. So I think that one of the things that our world is missing right now, as we lose control, is the fact that the loss of control is the chance to recalibrate to possibility. I don't know if that made sense how I said it, but to calibrate to all that can be when you get out of the way.
That is absolutely perfect the way you said it. So, most times when something amazing happens, it usually happens in the worst of everything, right? It's like, but at the time, we don't recognize that. We don't see it because we don't have the ability to see it. But then when we look back, we realize, oh my goodness. In this moment when that happened and everything was just falling apart and I was on my knees and it didn't feel good, that's when I was able to take and make it into a blessing because it was gifted for what was coming, right? And it's amazing because we're living in that moment right now. I mean, there's so much opportunity to take what we're experiencing and build something from it that is absolutely amazing. And I feel like part of this work that you and I are doing is exactly on point to the direction that we're heading.
Well, what you're talking about is perspective. And for all the listeners today, the greatest thing that I can tell you is perspective is the gateway to possibility. When I look at life, I have to understand that everything that I've been through has an effect on how I see the things in front of me. In other words, anything that you haven't healed from, anything that you haven't grown through, anything that you haven't worked on has a way of skewing what you see in front of you. So you'll find yourself in a beautiful situation where the situation is growing you and it's evolving you and it's maturing you and all of the catalysts that you need for transformation are there. And you'll find yourself looking around bitter, thinking that, you're only seeing what feels like adversity, and you'll miss that people can't build new muscles without resistance, right? If I go to a gym, I can do a certain amount of exercises and I can slim down and I can tone up. But if I really want to build new muscles, it requires resistance. It requires weight. It requires something that I have to push back against. I think that what we learn is that life works the same way. It is not the times in my life when I got everything I thought I wanted that I grew. In fact, I digressed in those seasons. It was the seasons where I thought I was going to lose everything, and even in some cases, lost most things, that I understood what was really valuable to me, that I started to learn what I was made of. Those are the times when I came to understand and know God. So to me, there's so many moments that you want to rush out of that are the very moments you're supposed to sit in. Because often we look back and you go, do you remember that time in our lives when we lived in that little shack and we didn't have two pennies to our name and we could barely afford bread, but we were so in love? Isn't that the story you hear people tell? Oh, do you remember when the kids were driving us crazy and they were all over the house and they wouldn't shut up? Boy, would I love those times back. It's always the times that are the hardest, that are the ones that in the end are the most invaluable. And I think that's the greatest lesson.
It's so on point what you're saying right now. And I hope that whoever is listening is understanding that whatever they are going through is also for them, like you're explaining. It's part of changing the outcome of what's ahead. It's part of redesign of what it is that your life will be. And so much of it is your mindset. So much of it is just having the ability to fully surrender, sit in the space, allow the healing process to happen. Because what we fail to recognize is that our bodies that we are living in that protects our souls they have all this DNA structure from our parents, from previous generations, and we carry that with us. And part of our journey is also to heal some of what's happened to our relatives, right? We have to be in a space where it's not just healing ourselves, but healing the trauma of the previous generations and really recognizing that. How do people do that, though? That's a good question, right? Like, how do people do that? So for me, my audience knows that I've had a very, very dynamic background. And for me, it was recognizing that sometimes what I was going through, the lens that I had wasn't coming from me. It was coming from the chatter in my head that belonged to someone else. Mm-hmm. It wasn't my chatter. And when I started to recognize that, I started to recognize, okay, this is stuff that isn't mine to carry, and I need to put it down and let it go. Mm-hmm. But people get trapped in that. They get trapped because they keep repeating the same experience over and over and over because they don't know how to shake it. And I know personally so many people that come to me and they say, oh, I want a new job, but they keep repeating the cycle of what they had with the current job. It's like they work themselves till they're burnt out, and then they end up quitting their job and they align themselves with the next one that they're going to do the exact same thing instead of getting into their true authentic self and recognizing what it is that they really want and asking for it, for it, having it come to you, having it gifted to you. And people don't think that's possible, but I'm a testament that is possible. Have you had that happen?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, you said a lot there. I guess the first thing that comes to mind when I hear you describe that is that we are a culmination of so many things, right? Like, you're literally a culmination of all of your experiences, but you're also a culmination of the lived experiences of others who interact with you. So as you said, you know, not only do you hear the words that are given to you by mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, whoever's around, but you're hearing also the influences that came from others that spoke to them. So it's the belief systems, it's the heart postures, it's the viewpoints, it's the stances, right? All of these things play on all of us. And I remember being a kid, and I would have these moments where my heart would be hurt. I would have these moments where I didn't feel good enough. I didn't feel wanted. I didn't feel needed. I didn't feel loved. And I didn't have words for that. I just knew that it didn't feel right. And I remember a few times going to people that I thought I could talk to and saying, I'm hurting. And the answer was, well, if you only knew what I went through, you wouldn't be belly aching about what you're going through. And so there was this pushing aside of my experience because someone else's was championed as more important. And so what we'll do is we'll take what we are going through, we'll push it to the side, and then we'll take everybody else's truth and reality to become our own. So now, every time I feel something, my brain says, well, you really haven't experienced anything. I don't even know what you're complaining about. You haven't had it nearly as bad as other people. Now their words become my internal chatter. Now their negativity becomes my firestorm on the inside. Now their heartbreak becomes my warfare. And so I think that the key, you know, there's so many, like, expressions that are out there, and I get them, but I fight with some of them because I think that some of them don't get explained well enough. One of them is live your truth. I think live your truth is beautiful as long as it's rooted in finding the truth. If my truth that I'm standing in is actually a whole bunch of other people's half-truths that I was raised with, it's not my truth. And so I will just believe that I am, I'll start calling myself all these things. I'm so quirky and I'm so this and I'm so that. And really, that's what other people called you. And you started to just receive the abuse as the truth. You started to receive them not understanding you as your truth. You started feeling like you were left out and you accepted it as your truth. And sometimes that's not fair. And so I think that the key to truly not only breaking generational barriers and generational curses is to go find the real truth. Daddy's daddy's daddy hurt daddy's daddy, but daddy's daddy was worth loving. And daddy was hurt by daddy's daddy, but daddy was worth loving. And daddy hurt me, and I was worth loving. And the truth is that we were all worth something that we didn't always receive. So I'm going to make sure that today I receive it. I'm going to make sure that today I go get what I'm supposed to get because it's mine. And my experiences might not have taught me that it's mine. The things that I've lived may not have showed me that it's mine. But when I sit down in the stillness of the moment and I get quiet, it is so obvious to me that I was born to be loved, to be respected, to be cherished, to be admired. And if that's all the case, that when I ask of life to give me good, why wouldn't I expect to have it come back? When I ask a power greater than me to provide for me what I need for the day, why wouldn't it come? I was born to be loved. I was born to grow. I was born to evolve, not to be limited. And I think that that is the key, is that we get to the truth of life. The deep down, undeniable, even in the shades of gray, truth. And to me, that's how you break the generational stuff. That's how you break down the broken traditions of our families and our lives, is you get to the truth. The truth of what is greater than you and what is within you and what is around you. It's that. I think it's that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's powerful how you express all that. Because as we know, as we've been going through the recent years with our world changing so rapidly, and a lot of these changes, if we think about it, there was a time where we would see the evolution of technology take 10 years, 5 years, 3 years. And now we're at a point where technology is changing so rapidly. It's like a speeding train. You know, every 24 hours, the technology advancement is occurring around us. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to keep up with. It's difficult to wrap your mind around because it's just happening so fast. And it feels like all these technological advancements, all of these worldly changes, all of these social norms that are being put on the world, it feels like we're in a space where we really do have to get centered. We do have to find our own truth. And we also have to give ourselves grace. We have to give ourselves grace because we haven't experienced this time before. And I think people also feel really hard on themselves because they're recognizing that not everything is exactly how they would have liked it to be or thought it would be. You know, I was talking to a friend the other day and I said, can you imagine us having this conversation 5 years ago? We wouldn't be talking about these things. Mm-hmm. They weren't even on our radar. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like it seemed out of the possibility, but here we are having these conversations. And we really do have to give ourselves grace because the entire globe has been through a traumatic experience and a lot of the world is grieving. And as we know, grief shows and manifests in different ways. For some people, they fall into depression. Some people are just angry. You know, they can't accept it. It manifests in a lot of different ways. And I think it's really important that we call it what it is, mm-hmm. and recognize it for what it is, mm-hmm. and give ourselves grace that we are exactly where we're supposed to be in this moment as individuals, but our connectedness of the things being out of control, we disconnect from that, but learn the connectedness that we have control over. So what does that look like? Maybe it's connecting with your higher power, connecting with God, getting in prayer, connecting with your family, connecting with your friends, getting really authentic and real with that abundance of love that you can experience and reaching out for it. You know, you don't have to go through this experience by yourself. Mm-hmm. Somewhere in the world right now, someone's listening to this and they're feeling very isolated and very lonely. And I remember when I started Retreat to Peace, there was this beautiful woman in Greece that I was talking to, and she had shared with me that she was in her home and she had to give a piece of paper to the government to be able to leave her home. And she said to me, "I just want to die. I just want to die because I feel like I'm in prison. I feel like I can't leave. I feel like I'm going to be stuck here forever." And I pleaded with her. I said, "Please listen. Everyone in the world has had a different experience of what is happening. But universally, as humans, we all collectively have been brought into a space of grief. Collectively, all of us have, because we've lost people that we love. We've had our lives change. There's a lot of things that have happened. But this is where give yourself grace, recognize it for what it is, and then find the ways to move out of it. We've all done this before in some ways. When we were little babies, we would fall down and get back up. Mm-hmm. And we'd fall down and get back up and fall down and get back up. Mm-hmm. And eventually we learned how to walk. Mm-hmm. And who is there telling us to get back up?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you. I know that this is probably a different way of looking at it. And it's not to disagree. It's just almost a different viewpoint, right? I don't actually believe that we just started grieving. I believe we were already grieving and the grief was exposed. I believe that people were running from grief and running from pain, something you were talking about before we started the interview, that people were working 70 and 80 hours a week and chasing after the American dream and chasing after, you know, whatever in their culture and in their community and in their world they valued. And so they were chasing after this sense of normalcy that would give them meaning and give them value and give them worth. And most of them were chasing it without fully ever grasping it. So it was the carrot up in front of the horse on the stick that they just kept trying to obtain and kept trying to obtain and kept trying to obtain. And one day the world shifted and they were told, "You can't go after the carrot anymore." And because people didn't feel whole, because they already didn't feel loved, because they already didn't feel cherished, because they already didn't feel like their life had the meaning they wish it did, the grief set in. Well, I can't go chase after the thing that could finally give my life meaning. I can't go run after the thing that would finally give my life worth. So I guess I have to sit in my grief. I guess now I have to sit and accept the fact that I don't even know my partner, that I really don't even know my children, because I've been trying so hard to impress them. I've been so hard to quote, provide for them, that I've never learned how to provide clear communication. I've never learned how to provide my heart. I just learned how to provide financially. And so I agree that our world is grieving. But I feel like I'm at the perfect age. I'm 39 years old. I'll be 40 next year. I remember regular Nintendo. I remember rotary phones. You know what I mean? Like, I'm at that age when, like, I went into college without a cell phone. I left college not knowing how I ever lived without one. Right? I'm literally in that age where, like, we crossed over. The world was sad. I'm a feeler. The world was sad. There were always narratives that we tried to form and formulate as a culture, as different cultures. I remember, I'll give you an example, 9/11. 9/11 happens, and as an American, society said, 9/11 was a catalyst to bring the world together. And it united people, and it united a nation. But I had friends who were Arabic in their past, and I watched the news, and I saw places getting bombed and people getting bullied and beat up. America was unified, but it wasn't. It was unified for the most part. George Floyd, racial violence and racial tension. There's this man who gets murdered in broad daylight on camera in the midst of COVID. Well, there was a whole bunch of people who had already been saying that the strife between police and African American, it was a thing, it was tension, and it was real, and it was just televised. And the world had slowed down enough to watch. So when I look at the landscape of our world today, and I look at the changes, and I pay attention to the themes of the news and the words of the leaders, political leaders, religious leaders, whatever you're watching, what I see is that what always existed has simply boiled to the surface. What already was is, and what will be is going to be unless we realize what has always been. If we won't acknowledge that we were broken as people all over the world, we'll never find ways to become whole and healed. So I just feel like, as individuals, you and I have to acknowledge, I was sad before COVID, weren't you? I had most of my trauma before COVID, didn't you? Well, the more that you have opened your heart to sharing your story, the more that you've learned how many people were broken just like you. So if the world is made of broken people who have been through broken things, perhaps the thing that we've always needed is just to be honest about what we're living. Maybe it's not that life changed and we started living a different narrative. Maybe it's that we weren't being honest about what we were living. We were all living lies. We still do on social media. Go on Instagram, go on Facebook, go anywhere. And what you see is people trying to emulate a reality that's not real. I told one of my friends the other day, I said, I did a video, and I woke up one morning and I just had a heart to pray for people. And I started praying for people, and I felt led to just record myself praying for people. And there's a video, and I'm just crying. I'm crying and praying. I'm just crying and praying. And the video got 90,000 plays. And somebody said, well, what you going to do to get the next the next big video? I said, I couldn't tell you. Because that wasn't fake. It wasn't manufactured. There was no strategy behind it. There was no well-timed anything. It was my heart and soul poured out, and I hit record. What my kids love, what my wife loves, what my patients and clients need are my transparency, my honesty, and my openness, despite how much I'd like to seem perfect. It is my quirks that help them feel whole. Not my perfection. And I think that if we could acknowledge the imperfections of our cultures and the imperfections of our lives and our journeys and our past, that we would understand it's actually the imperfections that lead us to being perfected. Like if I didn't have a God-sized gap, I wouldn't need God. if I was whole by myself, I wouldn't need my wife. Like there's some things I can do all by myself. I don't need anybody, but there's something my wife does for me that adds to my life value. There's something my kids do for me that I didn't even know I needed that gives my life worth. It's in the gaps that we find the need for humanity. And so I think that we've always been grieving, that we've always been looking for more, that we've always been searching, and that the faster that we can as a people acknowledge that, then we can start finding ways and moments and conversations to become whole in the things we've been lacking.
I agree. And if anything, you know, you talk about the opportunity that this experience has brought to the world. It's incredible to me how much mental health has been brought to the surface and how accepted it's become.
Yes, absolutely.
Because there was a time where that was something that was taboo. You don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. And I really don't know any human being that has never been through some sort of trauma, rejection, depression, anxiety, some sort of loss, you know, major illness. Everybody has experienced something. And for us not to be able to accept that and process it and work through it and have this label put onto us, you know, like if we need counseling because we're going through depression or something and then be labeled for it. And it's almost like you're less than, you know, and if anything, my experience is that every human has experienced something pretty big, but that's what brings us all together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what brings us together.
Well, and I think that one thing that I would love for people to take away, because I am a counselor, and I don't think that the key is just to talk about it, but that's what we get told. From my experience, people have to learn how to feel about it. When I get a person who walks into a session with me as a coach or a counselor, and they're prepared to share their head, I can help them. I can give tools and techniques. I can help give them some relief from what it is that's stirring in their mind. When a person comes and opens up their heart, I can help them change their life. Because when you say that in your experience, every person you've met has been through something major, if that is the case, something major doesn't just affect your head, it affects your heart. It affects your ability to believe, to have faith, to feel joy, to love and be loved. Like when you get rocked to your core, it affects your ability to live. And so I think that one of the critical things, it's almost what scares me sometimes about therapy, just like I love therapy, is I've seen so many different types of therapists and so many different types of coaches. And so, because we all come from these different perspectives, right? And it's possible for me to help you cognitively, do everything right cognitively, and for you to walk out of sessions and still be completely lost. And I think that one of the things that I've learned how to do is to speak to a person's heart, not just their head, and ask questions that challenge a person's heart, not just their head. It's not just the aha moment. It's the, wow, I never thought of that moment. It's the, ooh, I felt that in the core of my being. Because let me tell you something. When that person touched you, when you got that phone call that took your breath away, when that life experience rocked you in a way that can never go back, that rocked your heart. That shook your soul. And what we need is to go sit down in rooms and not just pour from the head, but open up the heart to the possibility of healing. That's when real healing can come in. That's when God can use that therapist. That's when the gateways of healing begin to open up and flood through. That it's not just the cognitive, but it's the cognitive and the spiritual, right? I know I feel like I sound so deep right now while I'm giving these answers, but it's the truth. I mean, I've had people walk up to me, tears in their eyes, and say, "Maurice, you changed my life." And I don't take those words lightly. And no person ever said that to me. And I've had it happen many times. It has never happened because of how smart I am. I've never helped save a soul because I was smart. I don't think that's how life usually works. I think usually when it's the lasting, powerful, wow, I can't believe my life just got changed, it's deeper than what we know. And I just want to encourage people, if you're walking into that therapist's office, if you're signing up for that coaching session, if you're reading that book, if you're hitting your knees for those prayers, if you're opening up that notebook for that journal entry, challenge yourself today to come from the heart. You don't have to worry about it tomorrow. Like tomorrow, you got to worry about tomorrow when that comes. Just today. Come at it from a heart place and get honest and get real and see where that takes you. And I think that is the greatest key to real personal change and evolution and breakthrough and miracles, signs and wonders that everybody's looking for. The miracle, the sign and the wonder is that your heart is still working even though it's been broken. And it's the fact that it can be mended.
That's beautiful what you just said there. Mm-hmm. That's really beautiful. There's a lot of people that struggle with living in that heart space and coming from that heart space because, to what you were saying earlier, they have to armor up in protection. So it's like, how do I let this guard down when I'm so used to the same experience playing out over and over and over? You know, it's a difficult process.
It is, but what, I don't know anybody who wears the armor and doesn't still hurt.
Right.
Right. So when I sit down across from a person with walls of protection around themselves, they're always hurting within the walls. They're always in pain within the armor. So my thing is, if you're going to hurt either way, make it count. If it's going to break your heart either way, then break in a way that it can be repaired. Don't just break in a way that is hidden from the world that will stay broken. In a surgery, a surgeon must cut a person open, take their tools, and in the midst of the most open and exposed situation, bring forth healing. Brokenness is required. And so my whole thing is, this goes back to what you brought up earlier, because I just loved like how you introed it, and they didn't get a chance to hear our conversation earlier, and you poured out so much to me before we started, which is why I think I feel the way I do right now. People have been running from their pain, but the pain was present. They were trying to numb it. They were trying to avoid it. They were trying to ignore it, but it never actually works. You're still hurting. And I've been there. I've had my alcoholic moments. I've been high. I've ran to woman after woman. I've been a workaholic. I mean, I've done it all. And what you do is you throw back a couple of drinks, and then after a while, now you're drunk and sad. You go and you have that sexual fantasy fulfilled, and the moment that it's over, you're like, huh, kind of wish I didn't do that. Nothing lasts. Everything is temporal. It's poof and it's gone. And so I guess what I'm saying is, you're already in pain. So why not embrace the process of exposing the pain to what can heal it? It's already there. Why not get something out of it? When I'm doing an interview, there's nobody who's hearing me talk right now who doesn't think I'm wide open, right? Somebody can listen to this interview and can criticize me, can judge me, can chastise me, and it would hurt me. It would hurt. I have insecurities just like everybody else. I spent half my life hearing what I'd never do and what I'd never be and what I'd never become, and the voices still try to talk to me on the inside. I am wide open in this moment. But I'm wide open because I'm trusting a kind of protection that I could never provide myself. When I stop believing I'm the only person who can protect me, I sometimes cut off the ability of the divine to protect me. And I understand, excuse me, I understand that some people had moments in their lives, most of us, excuse me, most of us had moments in our lives where we needed divine protection and it didn't come. That can I say that out loud, right? Where we look back and we go, well, where was God then? I say that in my book. That's why I'm okay with saying it out loud. It's in the last book I wrote. Most of us, when we practice healing and we practice forgiveness, most of us at some point consider the fact that we may have to forgive God, or our perception of forgiving God, right? And so part of the process of protection is realizing that if it's true that everything in your life that you've been through can become a catalyst in this moment to bring all of your greatness out and to bring forth all of your beauty and to bring forth everything you were born to become, if that's true, then the divine can use anything. Then your higher power can use all things. And perhaps protection in a moment doesn't look like armor or walls. What if protection is simply for the things that used to hold you captive to now be your catalyst to the greatest healing moments of your life? What if that is the protection? What if the protection is I tear down the walls of feeling like I have to keep this secret to myself, and I tell the truth and it sets me free? What if that's the protection? What if I don't need walls? What if I need air? I think most of us, we think we need walls. You ever seen a bird in a cage? It's kind of sad. You're like, boy, I hope that bird can get back out to to the sky at some point soon. You ever see a dog in a cage? You're like, boy, kind of hope at some point soon the dog can go outside and start running around. How long have you lived in your cage? Mm-hmm. We put ourselves in a cage. We live in mental cages, stuck in a moment we can't get out of, stuck in moments that we choose to disappear back into. And I think the key is to understand I don't need this cage to be protected. I need freedom to be protected. I need the air to be protected. Ultimately, the way that I look at it, I understand there's a bunch of different ways people look at life, but from my life view, I need God to be protected. And God says, go be free. Mm-hmm. Get out of the cage. Get from behind your own walls and sit under mine. Mm-hmm. And so I think to me that's the key to me. Go find real freedom. Hurt your way to freedom. Cry your way to freedom. you don't get as free as I am today. And I still have areas of my life where I'm not free like everybody else. You don't get here without a whole bunch of tears. You don't get here without pounding your fist on floors asking why. You don't get here without being hurt. And you don't get here without hurting other people. You don't get to this place of freedom without paying a price. But I was paying a price when I was broken. So if I'm going to pay a price either way, let me pay a price to get something that is invaluable.
Right. When you were in a cage, when did that show up for you in your life?
I think that I first knew I was in a cage. I don't know the exact moment. There's a memory I have of being about 11 or 12. Life had been rough in moments for several years before that. But I remember I was standing in a room and I heard the sound of our garage. And I was frozen. I didn't know what was going to walk through the door. And in those days, I had already been well-trained and well-conditioned to learn how to tiptoe my way through life, to be sometimes seen and sometimes heard and sometimes felt. My wife still today says, "Oh my God, how do you always sneak up on everybody?" Because I learned how to be there and not there. And I remember there was this moment where the garage door started to open and my heart started to race. And I thought to myself, I don't think I'm okay. And I don't think this is normal. And I don't know who I can talk to. And I don't know who I can be honest with. But I don't think I'm okay. And it was years later before I ever talked about those types of feelings. Crippling fear, crying myself to sleep at night. Laying in bed wondering why nobody loves me. Doesn't matter if people did love me. I perceived that no one did. And so there were these moments that I had where the cage, the prison cell, it started to become comfortable. People would try to reach out to me and want to befriend me, and I would only let them so far. I learned how to manipulate communication. I can laugh my way through anything and joke my way around anything that I want to. And so I would humor my way around things so that I could get back to the cage as soon as possible. It was safe there. Because I'm so observant that I would catch the person snickering at me when they didn't think I was paying attention because they were making fun of me when I was talking. I would catch the person who was judging me from the other side of the room. I would catch the things that would bring out my insecurities. I'm way too observant. The things that people don't tell you till later and you're like, yeah, I've known that for a decade. And so I started to despise being out in the open. It hurt too much. I'm one of those people because I have a big personality. People feel like they can say anything to me. So they sometimes do, and that's not a good thing. So there's the people who come up to you and share their heart. But there's the people who just walk up to you and go, I don't like your shirt, and walk away. And you go, do you normally walk up to people and just tell them you don't like their clothes? Well, no, but you're you. Oh, maybe I need to stop being me. The people who would never have small talk with you or invite you to dinner, but when their girlfriend broke up with them in high school, call you on the phone. Maurice, I heard you're good at this. Huh, maybe I don't want to be good at this anymore. And so I feel like at some point, I started to take pleasure in the prison. Like it was so familiar. It was so comfortable to be there. I knew how to navigate it. I don't know how to navigate you hurting my feelings. I know how to navigate being guarded, though. I know how to navigate being a control freak and keeping myself in the control so you can never have control over me. I know how to do that. So when did it start? I don't know. But I know a lot about how it continued and how I lived in it and how I thrived in it in some ways. Or it looked like thriving to me, right? Until ultimately I realized I was drowning. I hope that answered your question, but sometime around there, you know.
So when you're drowning, someone right now is drowning.
Mm-hmm.
They're listening and they're drowning.
Mm-hmm.
What advice do you give someone who feels that way?
Stand up. Stand up. Many of the people that I meet in life, they're drowning and they're in a body of water that is so small that if they stood up, they would stop drowning. The problem is you've been lying down in that pool for so long, that's why you're drowning. Stand up. And when you try to stand up, it's going to be unfamiliar to you because you're some of those muscles it's going to take to stand, you haven't used them for a while, if at all. And so you're going to feel a little wobbly underneath you and it's going to be a little shaky. And you're going to be feeling like you can't stand in your own strength. And perhaps you can't. Maybe you're going to need to lean on somebody else. But the greatest thing that you can do is to understand if you're drowning, you're not necessarily drowning because of how much water is surrounding you. Maurice, you don't understand what I've been through in my life. You don't understand how many tragedies. You don't understand how many heartbreaks. I hear you on all that. But if you're here and you're listening right now, it's for a reason. And so if you are tuned in this moment, and anything that I'm saying is resonating with you, then understand that even if you are surrounded by water and there's a ton of water, maybe you don't understand the giant that you are. Maybe you were born to be so large that that's why so many people have tried to pull you down, because it's intimidating to them all that you are and can be. So the greatest advice that I can give to anyone is take a breath and then stand. And let me tell you something. I have my brother who was closest to me. He drowned. He died. He drowned in water. And the story that they told was that they tried to save him. And when they tried to grasp hold of him, he was fighting to get above water. And so he ends up fighting the very people trying to save him. And so the key is that when you get up, you have to get up in a way that's controlled. Get up with intention. You can't fight everything that's around you. If you try to fight everything, you're going to find yourself fighting against the very thing trying to save you. Yes, you're fighting for your life, but you fight for your life one prayer at a time. One conversation at a time, one journal entry at a time, one stare in the mirror and practice of affirmations at a time. You don't give up by just cussing everybody out around you and letting everybody know you've been holding me down for too long and I'm done. Like, that's not how that happens. You can't fight your way out of this. Not that kind of fight. You fight by saying, God, I'm ready. I want this. So I'm going to start to stand. Please help me. Let somebody stand beside me. Let somebody be in front of me so that if I start to fall, let somebody catch me. But please help me stand. And if you start to stand and then you start to fall over and you slink back in the water, that's okay. Start to get up again. And then start to get up again. And then start to get up again. And after a while, you'll realize that you're doing the same kind of stuff as push-ups when you try to get up again. And you try to get up again. You're building muscles. I said you have to push against the resistance. So even if the process of standing is hard, it's not proof you're not meant to stand. It's proof that you have to weather the storm and weather the process to build what is necessary to become what you need to be to stand all the way and sustain it. I'm standing right now, but I remember what it was like to drown. I remember the days I was mad that I didn't drown. Can I say that?
Yeah.
There's somebody listening right now, and there are days when they wake up and they're mad that the water didn't kill them. I promise you, I know what that feeling is. I have been there. And the greatest thing that you can understand is that if you're still breathing, if your heart is still pumping, if you're still here, there's a reason. And you getting up, what you don't realize is this. You're laying down on the ground and the water is surrounding you and you're looking up. And what you don't know is that there's somebody a distance away from you and they're laying down too. And you can't see them and they can't see you, but when you get up and start to walk, they're going to catch a glimpse of you. And you're going to give them hope. You're going to show them what is possible. You're going to build their faith. Your story of getting up will be the catalyst to someone else's miracle. I'm somebody's. Why not you? I hope that somebody just truly takes in the fact that there's somebody who needs you that you've never met. There's somebody who needs you who you don't even know exists. I don't know whose life I can be changing right now, but I fully believe that I'm here to change it because of grace.